We know about the negative health impacts of poverty and racism across the income spectrum. People of color experience the stress of living with wounding microaggressions, and low-income whites and people of color know the stress of entrapment in poor communities. But we frankly had no idea how hard it was for a 32-year-old public health researcher to get across her groundbreaking theory about what she called weathering decades ago. Weathering, it means people's health not weathering, the constant exposure to stress. But when 32-year-old Arlene Geronimus, who happens to be white, first presented her work in 1990 at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, she was excoriated, first and foremost, by white progressives. And so she retreated into her research at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, stopped going to conferences, stopped talking to reporters. Well, now, 130 papers and plenty of validation later, Dr. Arlene Geronimus is emerging. She has a new book, The Extraordinary Stress in an Unjust Society, and she joins us now. Dr. Geronimus, nice to have you out in daylight. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, it would take us back to 1990. You had been trying to understand as a young 32-year-old why there was such a high infant mortality rate in black infants. And the conventional thinking was it was, because of black teenage pregnancy. You found what?
I found that wasn't the case. I had showed that risk of infant mortality went up with maternal age from the late teens onwards in black American women, unlike in white. So that sort of challenged the conventional wisdom that the teens are always the worst time to have kids, at least in terms of health outcomes.
It also raised the question, why? Why would mortality rates go up for the older black women, and what'd you find?
I posited at that point that the reason why is because the effects of structural racism on the bodies of black American women made them age faster in some sense. At that point, I was thinking of it somewhat metaphorically because I hadn't done all the work that I've done since then, and other people hadn't done some really important work that added pieces to the puzzle. And I wanted to raise a possibility that their health deteriorated over time and that that superseded what we think of as a universal developmental ideas about reproductive health. And so the question is, what's happening in the lives of Black American youth and young adults that increases their poor health over time in ways that also affect their birth outcomes?
Well, the reaction was, you know, incredible. The Progressive Children's Defense Fund called your arguments perverse. They said that you were promoting Black teenage pregnancy, which you were not. But regardless, what was your response at that time? I mean, now it's accepted. This is accepted medical wisdom, but at that time you were excoriated.
Yes, and I was also in many ways censored, so I couldn't kind of explain what I was really thinking the implications of my work was. You know, I was in the second year of being an assistant professor, so I was not tenured. As I said, I had not anticipated this reaction because the scientific reaction I had gotten when I had submitted grants to the National Institute of Health was that my work was sound and solid. And in my mind, I was suggesting that things are worse than we thought about health inequities. People were accusing me of wanting to keep teen mothers barefoot and pregnant. I got death threats. There were letters to the president of the university calling for me to be fired. My phone didn't stop ringing day in and day out for months. So it was a kind of traumatizing experience for me, but it didn't stop me from pursuing this work because I just thought it was very important.
And thank goodness you continued the work, because I'm going to jump ahead. And here I'm reading of a psychophysiologist. This is Dr. Elizabeth Brondolo at St. John's University explaining this idea of discrimination leading to health effects. Breathing, heart rate, blood pressure shoot up. The bloodstream is flooded with glucose and fatty acids. There's chronically elevated blood pressure, which can damage arteries and veins, which can lead to hypertension. This is now accepted research. You kept plugging along to find this conclusion, but along the way, you also expanded it. Talk more about how you expanded this.
I expanded it to Black men as well as Black women. I expanded it to people who throughout their life, not just their reproductive ages. I looked at all these kinds of chronic diseases of aging that some populations have an earlier diagnosis of than others. I looked at other populations, Latinx populations, high poverty white populations, both in urban areas and in Appalachian Kentucky. And I want to be clear, it's not simple discrimination as in, you know, someone consciously saying something racist to somebody else. Mm. It's the high effort coping that people who are subject to that kind of oppression or exploitation engage every day just to make ends meet and expose themselves as well to environmental toxins, to malnutrition, to a variety of objective stressors. It's how the entire system affects what people's everyday lives are.
Well, as you and others have said, there's no recovery from it. There's no escape from it.
What happens when you're living in marginalized or impoverished group is that you're experiencing stressors right and left. And so you don't get to have that recovery period. So the fats and sugars, white blood cells are constantly flooding your blood vessels, leading to things like diabetes, hypertension.
Yeah.
And if you're pregnant, this means your fetus isn't getting the nutrients it needs on a chronic basis.
Well, bring it up to more recent times. We know you were contacted by people charged with creating COVID policy, and you were able to tell them that they needed to expand their thinking. They couldn't just have drive-through testing centers because a lot of people don't have cars. Tell us more about that.
I had talked about the ways we shouldn't make it harder by adding to the stressors they already feel or making it basically impossible to negotiate getting somewhere for a vaccine because of how that vaccine system was set up. I also feel the more important thing that weathering contributes to the COVID conversation, and it was actually one of the main reasons I, you know, came out from under my rock and wrote this book, is that all your body systems are eroded by weathering. And if you add to that, that the way our job markets work is we've put people of color, people working class, into what we called essential work jobs. They couldn't just work remotely or stay home. They also often live in overcrowded housings with other people who are also not able to just stay home. I felt they were being put more at risk by this kind of what we call a segmented labor market that is structurally racist and classist.
Well, it also directly relates to something that happened in 2020. An immigration lawyer contacted you, and this was when there were detained immigrants on the border, and it was said that those who were vulnerable to COVID could be released from that confinement. And you were able to show that people who were chronologically much younger than, let's say, the 70 or 60-year cutoff, whatever it was, were actually, what, unhealthier inside and older inside because they'd weathered.
Right. I was contacted by an immigration lawyer at a time where COVID was spreading like wildfire in detention centers. So there was a move for people who had not had their asylum hearing, who had not been convicted of any crime, but had been detained sometimes for years. If they were over age 65, they were released pending their hearings. So the immigration lawyer thought that maybe weathering could be used to point out that your weathered body could be as biologically old as if you were 65 or older. So I read the complete files of many of her cases, and based on my research and on their actual lives, poverty, being separated from their kids, being tortured or having watched family members get killed in front of their eyes by drug cartel people in their home countries, I linked that to this physiological stress arousal process and how that would weather them. And based on these very detailed arguments that I made, all the original cases she dealt with were released, and it probably saved many of their lives, and it led to the reuniting of some of the people who had lost their children during that horrific policy of separating mothers and children.
Yeah. Dr. Arlene Geronimus, how does it feel to know that the thing that you called weathering is accepted, it's studied? Has that been validating?
It's made me angry in several ways. I mean, of course, it's also validating, but my desire to flush this all out and to have people also studying it and applying it to policies and interventions was, you know, was not to be validated, but was to eliminate the inequities in health that have just stayed entrenched in our country. This is part of why I wrote the book. I felt I had to bring weathering into the conversation, that maybe people could be receptive to it now. I felt it was safer to come into the fray because there is so much literature on this now, and people were screaming for answers about how come the maternal mortality rate is going up, and why are people as wealthy as Serena Williams and as fit as Serena Williams, you know, being near miss of dying when she had her baby. Weathering is a plausible explanation for all these questions.
Dr. Professor Arlene Geronimus, her book is Weathering, the Extraordinary Stress of Ordinary Life in an Unjust Society. It's being published 33 years after she posited the theory, which is now widely embraced. Arlene, Doctor, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.